The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today we are live in the studio, which means we are taking calls at 970-353-1310 or toll free 877-353-1310. So we encourage you to call. We love hearing from you. We enjoy answering questions live. It's sometimes a bit of a challenge, which we're up to this morning. We've also got some emailed questions that we've been sent over the last week or so. So welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show. My name is Chris Stein. I am here with Jim Salnier, as normal, almost always.
You're saying I'm almost always normal?
No, I'm almost. We're almost always here together. Very infrequently are we
apart
from at least during the show.
We have less.
I try to get apart from you as much as possible at other times, but at the show.
We have less of Pete, though.
We have much less of Pete.
Yes, I saw him yesterday. He's still trying to work towards his retirement. Right. It's not going too well.
Not going too well. He's a busy guy.
He is.
He's in demand, and that's...
Especially because we sent two more people to him that I demand he has to be the attorney to help them.
Right.
And he's like, Jim, you're killing me here. But he says that in all good jest. He really loves to help people and work.
I think it's good news, or at least it should be affirming for him that he's still in demand at this point. When he's trying to leave, it's like the market, which is clients, is resisting this, which means he must do a good job.
He is still plowing ahead. He's shooting for a December retirement. We'll have to do something for him.
You think?
I think we should.
Probably be the nice thing to do.
Yeah. We'll buy him a cake.
Or we could grab him some McDonald's on the way into a show or something.
Some Metamucil?
There's lots of options.
we could be very funny on this.
We could.
Of course, he's listening now, so let's not tell him what we're going to do.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll talk about this later.
Yes. So, Pete, we were just joking. We're not going to do anything for you.
Yeah. That's a ways off. He'd forget.
But he will be here on the show, by the way, for those who want to hear his lovely voice again. Not next week. Mm-hmm. Next week we will be pre-recorded because yours truly, I'll be in Atlanta. I'm leaving Wednesday for my semi-annual Ed Slott IRA studies. He's got tons of stuff he's going to go over. He sent us an email. So I will be leaving Wednesday and in my studies Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then Saturday night, I'm flying home to Boston and visiting family, going to the Red Sox on Sunday, and spend about 3 or 4 days at home, and then fly back to Colorado on Friday. And then Pete and I will be live that Saturday. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be kind of a whirlwind
Yeah.
Time for
quite, you're quite the jet setter.
I know. And then you, on the other hand, may not be live with us because
I may not.
It is your 10th anniversary.
Correct.
Have you decided?
It's my wife's 10th anniversary, too.
Well, yours, too. Yes, both of yours.
Yeah.
And last time we were live, you were presenting to our listeners your conundrum. You did not know what – isn't there – I started thinking. I'm not married or anything.
Yeah.
But don't they have for every anniversary a certain thing?
They
like
do.
Like paper, water, glass.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I
so what's 10th?
I think it's 10 or something like that. Yeah.
10.
Yeah.
So you have to – what, are you going to give her a can?
I don't know.
Give her a can
probably
of peas.
Not. Can of peas?
Can of peas.
Like with the peas still in it or just the tin?
Well, that makes it more valuable. She can eat and have tin.
Very nice.
So tin is the 10th?
I believe it is.
It's got to be something more interesting than
I
tin.
I don't think so. I think that's it.
We'll have to Google
that. That's why I was
that.
Looking for ideas.
Well, you did. You got a vacuum
ideas.
From me.
Vacuum cleaner and tractor.
A tractor.
Mm-hmm.
A listener called in and said you should get a tractor.
Yep.
So if any listeners are out there today, be it iTunians, listen to us throughout the United States, or locally, right here in Northern Colorado, if you have an idea of what Chris should get his lovely wife. Now, she doesn't listen to the radio show, so you can say whatever you want. She has no clue we're talking about this. So any ideas that Chris can get his lovely wife for the 10th anniversary? Or if anybody knows, is it really tin? Tin? You sure it's tin? Should be like a diamond.
That's 50, I think.
50th is diamond?
Yeah.
Oh.
I got a long way to go for that.
Maybe silver?
It's the same. Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Tin?
Yeah. Well, the earlier ones are things like paper and wood. So tin is quite the upgrade from those things.
Oh. All right. Well, if anybody has ideas for Chris, you can—
I'm willing to go out on a limb, though, and not conform to convention and not get something tin related. So
well, we have to first—
Don't feel confined to the world of tin.
Well, we have to confirm as well that it's actually tin.
Okay.
But those who want to call and help out Chris, you can give us a call at 970-353-1310 if you want to pass the dime to KFKA for those who still have a landline and have to pay long distance. You can dial 877-353-1310. You can also email us. I do have my handy-dandy iPad, and you can email us at jim@jimhelps. That's jim@jimhelps.com. We'll get the email. We'll read it over the radio. Of course, we'll always protect your privacy and not use your name. But if you put your name and contact info into the email, you will be eligible for the pie drawing that we're going to do in 2 weeks when Pete is here live. And for those who want to know, I did find Ding Dong Daddy's paperwork.
Ding Dong Daddy from
Ding
Dumas.
Dong Daddy from Dumas.
Yeah.
He had called in and won the pie.
He did win the pie.
And then I lost his contact info.
But then you refound it.
I refound it.
Perfect.
I told you it would show up.
That's excellent.
So he should hopefully have been contacted. Oh, wait a minute. I found it, but I don't know if I gave it to Tina. I gave it to Andrew. I don't think Andrew knows what to do with it. I don't know.
That can be solved on Monday.
Yeah. Ding Dong, you're going to get your pie. Don't worry. Relax. But I found your info.
Excellent. We actually have a caller already.
Oh,
your,
with a question
your pleadings
or a,
I have no idea, but we're about to find out. We're going to go
anniversary.
Could be. We're going to go to Georgette in an unknown city.
In Greeley.
Hi,
Georgette,
okay.
From Greeley.
Now, last week I suggested the tractor.
Oh, you're the tractor woman.
I'm the tractor lady. Mm-hmm. If it's tin and she likes flowers or gardening, you could get her a tin flower box with flowers in it.
Oh.
And that would be a permanent forever. This is my 10th anniversary.
I got you.
I still can't believe
I'm
it's
adding
tin.
That to my list. A tin flower box with flowers in it. That's perfect.
Uh-huh. Yep.
That's a good
and
idea.
And diamond is 50 and silver is 75.
Wow, you're going to go 75 years for silver.
Wow.
Well, my aunt and uncle did it. She's going to be 100 in a few months.
Well, congratulations to her. What?
And I'm going to hit 50 in November.
They probably don't have a... and so November, you've got diamonds coming your way.
No, yes.
Excellent.
Oh, no, wait a minute, that. Georgette. I have some info here. Breaking news, according to Google.
Uh-oh.
Now, on the 9th wedding anniversary, you should get willow or pottery. However,
I missed that one.
Under the traditional. They have a new category now called modern.
Yeah.
So the 9th anniversary is leather. The 10th anniversary is tin or aluminum. So you can get her like Reynolds wrap.
Oh, aluminum.
Yeah.
However,
last year you should have got her a brand new horse saddle.
Yeah,
that's
leather,
right,
right, exactly.
But under the modern interpretation, the 10th anniversary is diamond jewelry.
Oh, that modern list has to be put together by the jewelry consortium.
Because the 11th is fashion jewelry, and the 12th anniversary is pearls under the modern.
Well, just put some loose diamonds in the tin planter with flowers. You got it covered.
Oh, wow. That'll probably work.
But do you think she'd rather have tin or aluminum or diamonds?
Well, it depends on the woman.
Yeah, it depends on the woman.
It really does depend on the woman.
It does. She actually probably would have liked a tractor. But I already kind of got that.
How about diamonds in a little tin can?
Oh, it'd be that would
weird.
Be good.
You can get best of both worlds. I'm just saying what Google has.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, Georgette. I like your idea of the flower box. That's something that we could – she does like flowers. This is kind of the month where we do some gardening outside. So she could add this, and then it would kind of be there permanently as a reminder.
Yeah, you could even have the raised engraving on it.
Oh, now we're getting a
now
little
you're getting fancy.
Fancy.
Now that's got to be like the 20th anniversary.
Yeah. Hey, we do a lot. We're worth it in 10 years. And 20 years is going to be bigger than that.
Oh, for sure. Well, thanks a lot
Love
for
you
calling,
guys.
Georgette. Have a nice morning. Bye-bye.
So perhaps the Jewelry Council is the one coming out with the new modern interpretation.
Yeah, I suspect De Beers or somebody's behind this.
Diamond jewelry and then...
Yeah.
Pearls.
Yeah, they're thinking, well, nobody makes it to 50 anymore, so we're not selling any diamonds.
75 for silver? That's crazy. So where does gold fit into this?
100 maybe? I don't know.
Wow.
Can you imagine being married for 100 years?
I don't think you could. You have to get married at birth.
No, you could get married as in your teens because there's people that make it to 115 or so. That's about as...
No, I don't think so.
I don't think I've heard of anyone being married for 100 years.
Nope, not in our lifetime. Maybe 1,000 years from now, we'd be living that long.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. So we got a ton of email questions. So I'm just –
Is this good news or bad? I mean, did we say something that was confusing or did we just prime the pump and it's just flooding in now?
I don't know.
With questions. Because if we said something that confused people, I feel bad. If we just have gotten people engaged and they're now wondering about their retirement planning and Social Security and things like that – that's great news.
True. I do want to point out, because I'm going through my list, I put little orange dots on all the email questions.
Good idea.
I thought so. Mm-hmm. The iTunian from Alaska, I did reach out to her, so she should have received an email from me, which pretty much just said you were going to reach out to her, because we had to research what she called, or what is called the ORP, Optional Retirement Plan.
In Alaska.
In Alaska, yes. So we had to do a little bit of research on that to come up with the answer to her questions regarding Social Security. You believe you have all you need and the answers, correct? Just in case she's listening.
I believe so. Okay. I should be reaching out to her
so
shortly.
We can straighten that all out. But that's one of the reasons. And I do want to point out to our iTunians, we love getting emails from y'all. So don't hesitate about
– Did you use y'all, Mr. Boy from Massachusetts?
What's wrong with that?
It's fine. You're embracing some local flavor now.
Isn't y'all more southern? See, I'm on my way to Georgia, so I'm just trying to practice.
It's fine, but some of that's leaked up in here because we have a lot of Texas transplants.
Transplants?
Up here in Colorado, yeah.
Okay, so y'all is out here in Texas too?
It's acceptable here. It's not. Didn't grow up from here, but it's acceptable here.
Okay. Will it be acceptable in Georgia when I'm there?
Sure.
It's hot.
Unless they feel like you're mocking them. If you try too hard, you're probably going to come off a little.
Well, y'all come back now. You hear? Huh? Pretty good.
If you say it like that and then go back to your Boston accent, it'll sound like you're making fun of them.
Well, we don't want to upset our Georgians. No. Our Georgians?
Probably Georgians would be safer, yeah.
Okay. Anyways, it is hot there. I already looked to try to figure out. It's 88.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
And humid.
Probably. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we'll be inside with AC. Okay, so I want to point out to our Alaskan iTunian listener, we're not going to get into her question today. I want to make sure we reach out to her and get it correct. I also want to make mention to our iTunians who write to us, or even locals who write to us, although we generally would jump a local to the top of the food chain and answer their questions quicker. It does sometimes take us a while to get to answer every single question. People will email us, and it's not that we can just answer them right away. It does take us a little bit of time because we are running a business. And Chris, well, Chris has much more time because he only works full-time at CSU, part-time for me, raises six kids, and has a wife. So you have a lot of free time.
We're down
time.
To three chickens now, though.
Three chickens?
Yeah, we lost another chicken last week.
Is this a plan?
Apparently chickens are
low on the food chain?
Very low life expectancy, maybe. Seems like there's lots of things that cause a chicken to expire.
Well, I was at a friend's house yesterday who had chickens. Let me tell you, they're pretty dumb.
Apparently, yes.
Because she went
true.
To feed them. Mm-hmm. She has eight. Mm-hmm. And there were five outside of their little chicken kennel. Mm-hmm. And there were three inside it. Mm-hmm. And there's chicken wire all around it.
Yeah.
So she throws this. She called it chicken crack. They went crazy over this stuff.
Mealworms.
And she threw this stuff down. Well, the five that were out are just instantly, their little heads bop fast. And they are bop, 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 bop. Yep. Well, the three that are inside the chicken coop are running into the chicken wire, kept repeatedly trying to get through it to the food, not knowing there's a door right there to their left. And I said to her, don't they know there's a door there? She says, well, it takes them a while to figure it out. And eventually they did. One chicken figured it out, and then the other two followed. But
her chickens are exceptionally dumb. Our chickens at least know where their door is.
It was pretty sad because I thought they were going to hurt themselves. They were really pounding into this chicken wire to get at this stuff she threw on the ground.
That's pretty bad.
Until one of them figured out, wow, there's a door here. Let's go out that.
Yeah, perfect.
Anyways, I just want to point that out. Yeah. Okay, so the Itunian from Alaska, we are moving forward on that. And we'll be all set. Do you want to talk about the latest question, which turned out to be a wow, or is that on the update?
It's on the update, so why don't we save it for then?
So we're going to save it for the update part. Okay, perfect. So I'm just trying to figure out which one we should
get to
first.
You know, when you put the little orange dots on them, why don't you collect them all into a folder, and then you can just go there, and they're all right there.
I don't know how to do that.
Oh. Well, this is a learning moment when we get back to the office.
You can put them in one folder?
You can drag them over into a folder. So then you just open that and you got a folder full of questions for the radio.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we got an email. It was more of a comment. So I'm going to comment on his comment because it ties into a person we helped with who did get back to us. If you remember, there was a physician who had put $600 in a IRA and thought he could deduct it. Remember that case? And then he got a promotion, and he was going to earn more.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect.
And was going to be ineligible to deduct it.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And wanted to know what to do.
He got back a hold of us, and he did confirm a few things. Excuse me.
Just to recap, if you earn above a certain amount, you are – anyone's allowed to contribute to an IRA. The question becomes – is the contribution deductible in the year you make the contribution, or is it not deductible? So there is no barrier to entry for making a contribution to a traditional IRA. The question becomes the tax deductibility of said contribution. And that's what we were talking about here. He assumed, but then he got a promotion, which pushed him above the earnings limit. And he was wondering what to do about the contribution that he had made.
Exactly. So he wrote back to me and he confirmed a few things. He will be earning probably between $250,000 and $300,000. So he feels because of his higher pay, obviously he is not going to be able to contribute to a Roth IRA. We had thought when we had answered this, he hadn't gotten back to me at the time. We had thought if his pay had stayed – at the levels it was, with his standard deduction personal exemptions, he would be a few thousand dollars under the limit. But he wanted to confirm with us, no, it's going to be a substantial raise, I guess you could say. And he's expected to earn between $250,000 and $300,000, and that is going to put him way above. So he wrote back and he asked
– would you like a cough drop?
No, I'm all set. I can't talk with my mouth full.
Well, you just – stick it in your cheek or something.
No, I'm all set. No, okay. I don't want that.
Okay, I'll have it here just in case.
You bring these now in case I start coughing? Or do you have a cold?
No, I don't have a cold.
You just carry cough drops in your pocket?
A couple of them, just in case.
Wow, pretty good. Okay, so he wrote back and said he still plans on doing his IRAs, and he wants to continue to put money in an IRA. So he wants to know, would it be easier to recharacterize? And he confirmed it was only his wife's they put the money in. And they put $200 a month for 3 months into a Roth. So there's $600 sitting in a Roth. Mm-hmm. He is not going to be able to make that contribution this year. So he wants to know, will it be easier to recharacterize, he writes, my Roth IRA into a regular IRA? Goodness, maybe I will need your cough drop.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
He asked, is it easier to recharacterize? He says, we plan on doing IRAs anyways since we should be able to do those with our income. Let me explain what he means there. Anybody with his income or higher could put money into a traditional, what they call a traditional non-deductible IRA. So he is right on that. He makes too much money to put money into a Roth IRA. He makes too much money to put money into an IRA and deduct it on his taxes. And what we mean by that, folks, if you don't understand what deduct, non-deductible means, let's just say, let's put this down to more middle-class people. Let's say you're making $50,000 and you put $5,000 into an IRA. And let's say you are not covered by an employer plan at work, so you are eligible with that much earnings and the fact that you're not covered by an employer plan, you can deduct that $5,000 you put into a traditional IRA. They'll call that a deductible IRA. In short, what it means when you go to do your taxes, you'll list $50,000 as your gross income. You'll subtract the $5,000 you put into the IRA. In other words, you get to deduct it, and your modified adjusted gross income would be $45,000. And then from there, you'll take any exemptions and personal exemptions, standard deductions, or if you itemize, you take those deductions, and you'll work your way towards your taxable income. So when you deduct something, it reduces your gross income. Okay. Anybody, though, can put money into an IRA and not deduct it. So in that case, if you earned $50,000 and you put $5,000 in an IRA, you would declare $50,000 in tax, excuse me, in gross income. You don't get to deduct it. Now, anybody doing that wouldn't be wise if you were eligible for a Roth IRA. And why is that, Chris?
Well, then with the Roth IRA, you've got excuse me.
Oh, do you need a cough
infectious.
Drop?
No.
Would you need a cough drop?
Goodness. No, I'm fine. Wow. It's contagious. With the Roth IRA, the contributions that you put in are eventually, when you withdraw them, going to be tax-free. You can take them out anytime you want, at least your contributions. The growth that is in there must stay in there without if you withdraw it before certain times. When you reach 59 and a half, you might be exposed to taxes and or penalties depending on how long that's been in there. The preference, if you can do it, if you qualify, is for a Roth, and that is why non-deductible IRAs are not as popular anymore as they were before, because they've been around a lot longer than Roths. So if you are going to make a non-deductible contribution, the preferable vehicle for that, if you qualify, is the Roth. But here's a specific case where they're barred or prevented from contributing to a Roth because of their earnings. So the traditional IRA non-deductible style is an opportunity that still exists for them. So
correct.
It's kind of a middle ground. It's better. Well, it's in this arena the best option that they have.
So he writes again, we plan on doing IRAs anyways. Well, he can, people, and mm-hmm. Doctor, if you're listening, you can do this. That's no problem. Anybody can put money into a non-deductible. But he asks, would it be easier? Would this method relieve us of any future issues? I would like to just take care of this problem once and not have to worry anymore. Here's where it gets a little unique. It's not going to relieve you of any issues. It's going to make your life much more complicated. Because when you put money into a non-deductible IRA, that is called basis. You have already paid taxes on that money that's going in. So the IRS says, look, you don't have to pay taxes on that money when you take it out. You'll have to pay taxes on the earnings, but you don't have to pay taxes on the money. So in order to do that, you have to start tracking your basis. Now, in a Roth IRA, you don't have this problem. You cannot deduct the money going into a Roth IRA, but the growth can be removed 100% tax-free. So you don't have to worry about tracking a lot of things in Roth. You still do, but not as difficult as it sounds. What he would have to do is start filing Form 8606 every year that he puts money into a non-deductible IRA to keep track of basis. And then if he continues to grow his employer plans, and then when he retires, he moves those employer plans into an IRA, now he's going to have a tremendous amount of tax-deferred money and a lot of basis. And every year for the rest of his life, he's going to have to file Form 8606 and keep track of how much basis he's removing in a proportional manner from his IRAs. And it is just a pain, the calculation. It's not straightforward. It's not easy. Now, they got computers nowadays that do it all, but you just have to remember to keep track of basis. So I want to let him know when he writes, would this method relieve us any future issues? No, it's going to create issues.
And did they have regular deductible IRAs currently? Is there, will they be having a mixture then of basis and non-basis in this IRA, or is this something they've just started doing? Are you aware?
I didn't get into that depth of conversation with them back and forth in emails. So,
because it'd be nice to do, you know, some backdoor Roth.
He also wrote though. Would it be easy to recharacterize my Roth IRA into a regular IRA, and would this prevent us from having to deal with paying taxes on any gains? So here's where I just want to straighten a few things out for him. Yes, if he recharacterizes the $600 that he put into his wife's Roth that they can no longer do because they earn too much money, if they were to recharacterize that to a traditional non-deductible IRA, they would not have to pay taxes on any gains. But let's be real. The market this year has not been doing well. He did this in January, February, and March. So I would assume his January and February deposits had actually gone down in value. The market's barely back to even. So there may not be a gain. And even if there is a gain, it might be 0.5% on $600. So you're looking at a few bucks. It's not going to kill him in taxes to remove the money. He can remove the money. The $600 would come out tax-free because he's never deducted it. And whatever dollars – goodness, I don't know what's going on. Whatever dollars of gain there are, he would have to – stop waving that cough drop. Whatever dollars of gains he has in there, those would be subject to taxes. Very minor tax issues I want to point out to him. But if he puts it into a traditional IRA, make sure you start filing Form 8606. That is the form you must file every year to keep track of basis in your IRA. Basis is money you put into an IRA that you do not deduct. The reason you have to track it is when you remove it, you don't want to have to pay taxes on it again. Because it's after-tax money going in, if you don't track it, when it comes out, the IRS is going to tax you on it again. So you have to file Form 8606, and then when you begin removing money from the IRA, there's a very convoluted calculation you'll have to do every year to keep track of the basis, how much of the money removed is basis, how much is non-basis. The government does not let you specify which one you're taking out. Every distribution will be a proportional mixture of basis and non-basis, or put another way, money you don't have to pay taxes on and money you do have to pay taxes on. So you cannot say I'm only taking out my basis or I'm only taking out money that I owe taxes on. The government says every distribution is a mixture and there is a worksheet you have to fill in. Again, computers do this or tax preparers can do this, but it does add to the complexity of your tax return. So he said he wants to keep things easier, Chris, and I just want to warn him, it may not be easier. He may want to look elsewhere besides an IRA. He may want to just invest in non-IRAs. IRAs are a nightmare. So he's going to have basis. All the gain is going to be taxable to him as income.
And that, I think, might have been his question. You were talking about it, addressing it as the recharacterization causing taxes on gains. His question might have been, will this make it so I can avoid taxes on gains in the future?
Oh, no,
and the action,
no,
the answer
no.
there is no. Unlike no. in the Roth, where all those gains will be tax-free, when they go back, when you put that money in the traditional IRA, the basis is not taxed, but any gains will eventually be taxed. They are simply tax deferred, so you won't pay taxes along the way. Just once when you remove the money, you'll pay taxes. So that's why these non-deductible IRAs aren't nearly as attractive as the Roth option if you have that possibility. So we're close to a break here, and but this, I think we're pretty close to the end of this conversation. But I agree with you that he would probably want to look at some other options for that money rather than the traditional IRA non-deductible style that he's looking to recharacterize in, because the glory that is IRAs is a little less shiny in – actually quite a bit less shiny in that
unless he's eligible for the back door. And that's the one thing he didn't tell me. And we'll talk about that when we come back. And then we'll get into more emails or calls if somebody wants to call.
Yeah. So again, this is a live show. So if you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 970-353-1310. The toll-free number, if you'd like to use that, is 877-353-1310. And then a third option would be to email live to the show. Email address would be jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. When we come back from this short break, we are going to hear one of the top songs from 1935, which is when Social Security started. This is a way we kind of connect the show to some Social Security topics. So 35 years ago, it was one of the first successes for this singer that became one of the top female jazz singers of all time. She went on to become this icon in the jazz world. This is one of her first successful songs.
Interesting.
So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We'll be back with you right after this short break. Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is Love and Kisses, sung by Ella Fitzgerald at the tender age of 17. This was when her career started in 1935, when she won an amateur talent show at the Apollo Theater. Was picked up shortly thereafter by the Chick Webb Band to test her out for 1 week. And if the audience liked her, they would let her stay. The audiences did like her, and she was hired to travel with the band for the fabulous sum of $12.50 a week. So over her career then, she would amass 13 Grammys and sell over 40 million albums. She did sound kind of young there. She sounded like I'm not sure I would have identified her as Ella, because she sounded, you know, she just had a more immature youngster voice there compared to what she evolved into.
It was a young Ella.
Young Ella, yes. But still a nice song. So we take a look at that, take a listen to that as our lead up to what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, which is a blog that we do because of the complexities of the Social Security system and all the options that you have available to you on claiming different Social Security benefits. And this in 1935, that was the beginning of the Social Security Act. That was when it became law. So it essentially established the beginning of the Social Security system that we know today. And so that's where we play that song from 1935. So back to our physician discussion. Those of you actually, before we do that, those of you who are just joining us, this is a live show today. So we're live in the studio here to answer any questions you might have. Certainly if you enjoy just listening to us handle email questions, We're glad you're joining us anyway. But if you have a question related to what we're talking about or unrelated, if it's just retirement related in any way, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number here, 970-353-1310.
You got a little bit of Jim rubbing off on you
today. A little bit. Well, I have some. There's numbers all over the place. I keep looking at them while I'm talking, and it's hard to say one number while you look at a different one. So 970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310 will get a hold of us. Email as well, jim@jimhelps.com. We'll come to us live in the studio here. That's jim@jimhelps.com. So before the break, we were discussing a person who had contacted us by email with some questions. The bottom line is they had begun this year contributing $200 a month into a Roth IRA, thinking they were going to qualify to do so. They got 3 months in and thus had contributed $600 into the Roth IRA, only to get a raise at work, got a promotion and a big raise, which pushed them above the earnings limit for Roths to be allowable for them. So they stopped contributing, realizing this was going to happen, and are asking what they should do with this $600. And we had previously, on a previous show, talked about recharacterizing that, that will have to come out of the Roth since they are not going to be allowed this year to make contributions to the Roth. They have to fix those, what turn out to be erroneous contributions. Those either need to be withdrawn completely, as if you hadn't made the contribution in the first place, or they could be recharacterized into an allowable plan, in this case, a traditional IRA, the non-deductible form of that, where you don't deduct that contribution on your taxes, because there is no earning limit for that type of contribution. That would be an option, and we were discussing that possibility right before the break.
Right. And the only thing I want to point out to him, because we did receive another email shortly after that first show aired, and it was a gentleman wanting to point out to recommend to the doctor the backdoor Roth. And that is something, and I wrote back to this gentleman, and I told him, you are right, the backdoor Roth could work for him. And it is something that I had mentioned in a previous email to the doctor. So I want to mention to our listeners what I'm talking about. If the doctor has no existing traditional IRAs, if he didn't have any, then he could continue with his strategy, Chris, of putting in his $6,500 a year contribution into a non-deductible IRA. And we explained in the previous segment what that means. He would still have to file Form 8606 to keep track of the basis in that. However, what he could then do is convert that IRA into a Roth IRA. That is perfectly legal. Prior to 2005, he wouldn't be able to because – excuse me, not 2010 because there was that special rule in 2011 and 12. So prior to, I believe it was 2010, he wasn't going to be allowed to do a conversion because if you earned more than $100,000, you could not convert an IRA into a Roth IRA. A conversion is where you simply take an existing IRA and essentially move the money into a Roth IRA. The government considers that a conversion, and you will pay taxes on any money that has not yet been taxed when you do that conversion. And here's why that strategy works, people. The doctor would put the $6,500 into an IRA, and remember, he's not deducting it. He's putting after-tax dollars in, money that's already been taxed. So then when he turns around and converts it into a Roth IRA, because the money has never been taxed, because the money has already been taxed, he's not going to be taxed twice on it. The money would move tax-free into the Roth, and essentially, Chris, boom, he got the $6,500 into a Roth. In order for this to work, it's called the backdoor Roth. In order for it to work, he or his wife cannot have an existing IRA, because Chris will explain in a minute why that wouldn't work so well anymore. If he had an existing IRA and his wife didn't, she could do the strategy. If his wife had an existing IRA and he didn't, he can do the strategy. If they both have existing IRAs, they both shouldn't do the strategy because they'll end up having to pay taxes on a conversion where they essentially contributed money that they've already paid taxes on. So it doesn't work if you have existing IRAs, and Chris will explain why in a second. But the doctor, if he's listening, that is a viable option. We do it all the time. And a couple of things, we received an email, and we talked about this on about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So I do apologize if people saying, wow, they've already talked about this. We did. We had another emailer. This gentleman, I believe, was from Maryland. And I walked through because he wrote to us a very specific situation that him and his wife wanted to do the backdoor Roth IRA as well. And he asked in that, how long does he have to wait before he can convert the, I guess, the backdoor money that he put into the IRA. How long does he have to leave the money in the non-deductible IRA before he can convert it, he asked. He wanted to know, is there any income limitation? And then he wrote, how long do I have to keep the money in the traditional IRA before I can convert it to the Roth? Now, I answered this before, but I'll answer it again. No, there is no income limitation. Anyone can do the backdoor Roth calculation. You can be Bill Gates. You can be this doctor who we're talking about who earns $300,000 a year. It doesn't matter. Why? Anybody can put money in a non-deductible IRA. Anybody, as long as you have a job. You can put up to 100% of your earnings or $6,500, whatever is lower. And that's if you are over the age of 50. If you are under the age of 50, you could only put $5,500 or your earnings, whatever is lower. But anybody can do it. How long does it have to wait? Here's where it gets a little, in my opinion, unnecessarily complicated. Some advisors, most of them are CPAs, say the step doctrine rule is going to get in the way. And the step doctrine rule does not in and of itself allow the back door and nobody should do it. Ed Slott vehemently disagrees. And the mere fact that the 2017 budget submitted by President Obama specifically addressed this issue, acknowledged it, and said they want to close this loophole already shows that they don't consider the step doctrine rule to get in the way of this. The step doctrine rule, in short, it's a very complicated rule, but they don't want you to do a series of steps that will lead to an ultimate outcome that in and of itself would not be allowed. I'm trying to put this in very simple English. And because people who earn more than a certain amount of money cannot put money in a Roth IRA, doing this strategy is a series of steps that leads to what? Something that generally is not allowed. But Ed Slott has, if you just Google Ed Slott step doctrine, you'll see a very good article he wrote on why this doesn't apply. And you can read his opinion on it. I tend to take his opinion. So I don't personally feel the money has to stay in there any length of time.
Right.
Now, some people say to be careful, keep it in there 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. I don't think you have to. Now, if you want to, go ahead. Doesn't matter. But just make sure you get the conversion done by December 31st of the year you want to do the conversion for. But I don't feel the step doctrine rule is an issue because, as Ed recently said, the mere fact that the president mentioned these in his budget is an implicit acknowledgement or explicit acknowledgement that these exist, that people are doing them. Mm-hmm. He didn't come out and say, hey, the step doctrine, we're going to go after these. He came out and said, we want to propose that only pre-tax dollars can be converted, not after-tax dollars. And that will essentially kill the backdoor Roth.
Right. Yep.
Because you're going to put after-tax dollars in and then convert them. So he said he specifically addressed the backdoor Roth and said he wants to propose a rule that only pre-tax dollars can be converted, not after-tax dollars. So that may find some traction in Congress. You never know. They usually appear, and then 2 or 3 years later, they become law. But anyways, why don't you explain, Chris, why, if he has existing IRAs, the doctor may not want to do this?
Well, the typical thinking is that you wouldn't want to mix these. Say you have a traditional IRA and truly traditional in the sense that people view these normally, where the money that's gone in has not been taxed yet. In other words, the contributions have been deducted on your taxes in the current year. Eventually, of course, when you take money out of a traditional IRA, if you deducted it on your taxes when it went in, you haven't yet paid taxes on that money, so they're going to tax you as the money leaves during the distribution phase. Well, if you already have an IRA that has these pre-tax dollars in it, and then pretend you're this doctor who now makes non-deductible contributions, you now have a single big IRA with a mixture of both pre-tax and post-tax dollars in there. You have non-basis and basis in tax lingo. The way the rules are written, when you then convert any money out of this account, you can't pick and choose what comes out. You can't say, I just want to convert to the post-tax amount or just the pre-tax. When you take money out, it is defined in the rules that it comes out on a pro rata basis. It comes out as a mixture. And this is where Jim's cream in the coffee idea really makes a lot of sense. When you put some pre-tax money in there and some post-tax money, it's like cream and coffee. They mix together. You can't take them out separately anymore. You're going to take them out as a mixture. And that's what will happen here. If you have a bunch of money in there that's pre-tax and then you put $6,500 of post-tax in there, when you take the money out as the conversion to the Roth, if you're trying to do a backdoor, you're going to have to pay taxes on the non-basis amount, the amount that you hadn't paid taxes on in the first place because of this mixture. So it really blows up the benefits of trying to do the backdoor Roth contribution. And in that case, we usually, if somebody's really adamant about getting money in a Roth, we would propose something maybe, depending on their tax situation, maybe using that money that they were going to contribute to instead pay the taxes on a conversion from their traditional IRA to the Roth. But even that doesn't make sense if you are in a really high tax bracket currently, and that maybe would change in the future. So it becomes another complicated decision, but generally we wouldn't recommend attempting the backdoor Roth contribution if you have an existing deductible IRA.
Right. And to put numbers to this, let's just say you had an existing IRA, a traditional IRA, so it's never been taxed, with $95,000 in it. And you put $5,000 in a separate, all by itself, non-deductible IRA. So in total, you have $100,000 in an you have $100,000 in an IRA. $5,000 in a non-deductible, $95,000 in a deductible. Even though they're two separate IRAs, the IRS says you've got one big IRA. They don't care. They're on to that game. I'm going to put the non-deductible money over here and then convert it. They're on to that, people. They're going to consider your IRAs one big IRA. So you have $95,000 in a traditional IRA that has never been taxed. You open a second IRA. You put $5,000 of after-tax money in there, and you think you're just going to convert that after-tax IRA of $5,000 into a Roth 100% tax-free. You're just going to get it put right into a Roth, and boom, there's the back door. Well, it doesn't work because the government is going to make you look at the entire $100,000 you have in IRAs, and they're going to say, okay, you have $100,000 total. 5% of that $100,000 is money that's never been taxed. Ninety-five percent of that money is money that's never been taxed. Only 5% is money that's already been taxed. They make you look at both as one big one. So then when you go to convert the $5,000 and you think you're going to get it in tax-free, I got news for you. 95% of that $5,000 is going to be subject to taxes again. So that's why it doesn't work if you have an existing IRA. The government makes you look at all IRAs as one big one, and then they make you take a pro rata amount. That's why I call it cream in the coffee. Once you mix cream into coffee, you can't get it out. Once you put some after-tax money, or money that's never been taxed, into an IRA, even if it's a separate IRA, the government says that money has seeped through all of your IRAs, and it's impossible to separate. So the backdoor doctor, if you're listening, is only going to work if you do not have an existing IRA or your wife doesn't have one. And then it will work beautifully, and you can go ahead and do it. And he mentioned his money is at Vanguard, and he was wondering in his email, could they help me? I don't want to speak for Vanguard, but I'm sure they could.
They should. Yep. So we are at our top of the hour break here. When we come back, we're going to hear the number one song this week from 1976 as we look back 40 years on our journey to what's new with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. On this song, let's see, it's a new song, this new number one song this week. It's the theme song for a popular situation comedy that featured a young John Travolta. I'm sure Jim, if he thinks about it for a moment, don't blurt it out. We're going to let people think about it over the break. We'll find out what that song is when we come back. This is a live show, so if you have your questions over the break, you want to call us, 970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310. This is the Retirement and IRA Show, and we'll be back after this short news break. Thanks for joining us.
Can't get to your radio? Listen to us online at 1310kfka.com or download the free 1310kfka app. Take us wherever you go.
The other newscasts, and I do listen to them. It's ridiculous.
Local headlines and breaking news as it happens.
You know, I always turn to you guys when I want to actually hear, some truth.
On News Talk 1310kfka.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is, of course, the theme song for what show, Jim?
Welcome back, Carter.
Not Carta?
Carta. Mr. Carta.
Yeah. Welcome back, Carta. Performed by who? Did you know that?
I did.
It is a popular group.
It is a popular group, mm-hmm. Yes. Offhand, I cannot.
It's actually not by the group, but it's the lead singer for a popular group, The Love and Spoonful.
Oh, okay.
That was John Sebastian singing that song from The Love and Spoonful. Song originally had only one verse because it was the theme for a TV show, but to capitalize on the popularity of the show, Sebastian added a second verse, and the show's title, Carta, was changed to Welcome Back, Carta, to tie in better. So I liked that show.
Yeah, it was
occasionally,
a funny show.
Occasionally I catch a rerun. It's... Talk about low production requirements. It's a camera or two set up one scene just in a classroom. They're just in the classroom, room.
Occasionally they're in Mr. Carter's apartment.
Occasionally, I know.
Because they come in through the window.
Right. But it's really just – talk about a cheap set, a cheap production of a television show. It's these kids sitting at desks and Carta sitting at his desk, and then they just talk in there, and that's the whole show.
Interesting.
It is, yeah.
All right, we got a series of emails during the break.
Oh, a flurry?
A flurry.
Okay.
First email I want to read, mm-hmm. 6 kids, 10 years, requires diamonds.
Six. That's about the best justification I've heard. So I'm going to be safe with anything with diamonds. Okay. I'll put a little asterisk there.
Just mm-hmm. saying what the listeners are saying.
No, makes sense.
Total sense?
Total sense.
Okay. Here is the question. Mm-hmm. They write, my husband is 66 and still working. This is a Social Security question, people. I'll have Chris answer it. It's going to be hard to answer. I mean, easy to answer, but hard to explain. It's much easier when you hold your fingers up and you're showing it, like you were doing during the break.
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Now, our listeners
can't
see
that. We don't have to explain all
that
detail. We can answer it more basically for the listeners.
So she writes, my husband is 66 and still working. I am 61 and work one day a week. I probably won't be working by time I'm 62. If I start taking my Social Security at 62, can I switch over to taking one half of my husband's benefit once he starts receiving it? Now, before Chris answers, I want to address one quick thing. You do not get one half of your husband's benefit. You get one half of his PIA. his benefit, especially since he's 66, if he were to wait to 70 to claim, you don't get one half of his age 70 benefits. You get one half of his PIA, primary insurance amount is what PIA stands for, which is essentially the amount of money he's entitled to receive at his full retirement age, which just so coincidentally is age 66, his current age. Mm-hmm. So if he does wait, listener, to age 70, you don't get half of his age 70. You get half of his age 66 benefit. Okay, that's all I want to say with that.
And just to clarify even more, I think people get confused by that because if we're talking about survivor's benefits, the survivor does receive benefit of any delayed credits that the person who passed away was awarded prior to their passing. Spousal benefits, they do not get any reward for the main worker to wait.
Right.
So if there is a difference with survivor benefits.
If the husband is listening, you're worth more dead than alive to your wife.
That's true.
Okay, so answer her question. If she starts claiming at 62, can she switch to taking one half of her husband's benefit, which we also already described as one half of her husband's age 66 benefit? Can she do that?
Kind of. She, at 62, can go in and file for Social Security benefits. That's the first age of eligibility is what it's described as. And that point you are eligible to receive your own retirement benefit if you've earned one, or a spousal benefit if you are eligible for one because of a spouse's work. Age 62, the door gets unlocked and you can go in and file. Now, those of you who know a fair amount about Social Security rules know that at 62, you can't pick and choose. When you go in, you are going to be paid whatever the maximum amount that you are eligible to receive. So if it's a spousal benefit, you'll be paid that. If it's your own benefit, you'll be paid that in effect. Here, because of the details of this case, when she goes in, she can actually file and she's only eligible for her own benefit. She doesn't have access to the spousal benefit until her husband files himself, and she made the comment that he had not yet filed. So if that's still the case at her age 62, where he's still working and not filing yet, she can go in and all she'll be able to claim, even if she wanted something else, is her own benefit. And it will be reduced because she's filing before her full retirement age of 66.
And it'll be reduced by about 25%.
Correct. It'll be reduced permanently because of that early filing. But then once her husband files, at that point she becomes eligible for a spousal benefit. In the old days, what I mean by that is 6 months ago and before.
long time ago. What were you doing before 6 months ago? I can't even remember.
Well, I had one more chicken.
You had one chicken more,
I had four chickens instead of three. The Social Security wouldn't automatically switch you to the spousal version. You could still ride out and continue to receive just your own, waiting for that maybe that spousal benefit to reach its highest amount at your full retirement age. That rule has changed, a little adjustment to the rule. Now, the new rule is the Social Security Administration is required to automatically switch you to the spousal version when the husband, in this case, files for his benefit. So you've lost a little bit of control, not necessarily – maybe this is something you would have done anyway, but the point is you have no choice now. They are automatically going to bump you up if the spousal benefit would grant you a higher benefit than just receiving your own. And it doesn't – the bottom line to remember, and there's a lot of variations on this depending on how much you're affected by the reduction – depending on your age when all of this happens. So I don't want to get too off into the weeds with those details, but let me just make the general statement that if you file for any benefit prior to your full retirement age, you are, no matter what happens, you are going to end up with a permanently reduced benefit even if you switch to the spousal benefit at some point in the future. Doesn't mean your benefit won't increase because of the switch to the spousal, but it will never become as high as if you had waited to 66, your full retirement age, to claim. You'll always be affected to some degree to a reduction. The degree of the deduction depends in this case on exactly how old you were when you filed your own, how old you were when your husband filed, then granting you access to a spousal, and you know how far away you are from your full retirement age. So did that, without getting too complicated, do you think that handled it?
I think it did. It was much better when you were holding up your fingers.
Well, there's not really a way to simulate that on the radio.
No. But when he held up his fingers, people, it really made sense. So the people may have a hard time following it. That's one reason I want to get our YouTube channel going. This would have been a perfect question for the YouTube channel because you could have been seen.
I won't be able to wear my pajamas to the radio
station. No, you'd have to dress
anymore,
nicer than you are now. Yeah. But on the YouTube channel, you could hold your fingers up, or maybe we could even be more high-tech than fingers, and we could actually have some sort of computer screen showing this with color and everything. It'd be pretty neat.
That's pretty fancy.
Yeah, I know. Well,
we might have to find a little nicer studio.
Well, we're not going to film it here.
Oh, okay.
We'll do it in the office.
Well,
this
came up spontaneously, so.
Well, I keep saying I want to do that YouTube channel.
Okay, that sounds complicated.
Well, you'll figure it out.
And stressful.
You just don't want to do it
because
you don't want to
be seen. Maybe Adrian can help us with that. Adrian? Adrian could help us with that.
Yeah, he's shaking his head, yes.
Yeah, perfect. And are you graduating pretty soon? In the fall. So he'll have some time on his hands after fall semester. And
you know, assuming he's going to get a job?
Well, maybe we need him.
I'm not hiring him full-time to do YouTube.
Not full-time, but he can do this and that, and he can have, like, you know, several jobs. That's kind of the new workforce. Kind of spread yourself out.
Okay.
Diversification.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, we will think of the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And we're going to need a cameraman.
Adrian,
someone to do makeup.
Adrian, he can handle it all.
Okay, so let's get back to a few other things. So we had that. Thank you, listener. Oh, by the way, you might as well write that person down.
Yes,
I don't want to give the name. They gave their contact info so they can
but
be in
we
the
could
pie
just
drawing.
Maybe use their first name as if they'd called. Is that okay?
I don't know. Can we use first names?
Well, when people call, we use just their first name.
Well, we always call them George.
I know, but I never figured that out because when they call in, we use their first name.
Because if they call, they're willing to be identified. If they email, they're kind of being, you know, hey, I don't want to be known.
Okay.
But they're giving us their name because
this?
We tell them
to
in order to get the pie.
George.
Georgette. It's a woman.
Okay. Georgette. But then for my own notes, so I can keep, because we might have more than one Georgette.
Put her real name in parentheses.
Right. And
I'll write
that. You'll tell me who that
begins
is.
Begins with
the
a
break.
D.
Yeah. I got it. Oh, you just gave it away.
He said it begins with a D.
People are going to figure that out.
Oh, yeah. Narrows it down. Rules out every Frank.
Right.
Okay.
And we have another flurry of emails, or actually, reminder to everyone, we're here willing to take your calls on any retirement topic, 970-353-1310. We've kind of I don't know if bogged down. That sounds bad. We've kind of gotten into this Social Security vortex where that's all we're talking about lately.
Well, that's what people are writing to us.
I realize that. I'd kind of like to mix it up a little, though.
Well, we have another email, but this is going to be addressed in the What's New on Help with My Social Security.
But again, Social Security.
Well, that's why it's called What's New on Help with My Social
Security. But the show is Retirement and IRA Show.
People have a ton of questions on Social Security. And this one is an interesting one.
Okay.
What's New on Help with My Social Security? Next segment, people. Even stumped the professor who writes our software program we use to determine Social Security optimization. When we told him the situation, what did he write? Nasty, nasty, nasty.
Yeah.
Because of what Social Security did to this person. So, with the rules, not, Social Security themselves didn't. Well, who made the rules?
Congress?
No, I don't think Congress made this rule. I think Social Security made that rule.
Could be.
But we'll share that with you. So you don't want to get to this other Social Security question then?
Well, as long as no one's going to call, we'll have to. But I would like a call at 970-353-1310 with a question about, I don't know, para or a fixed annuity or Medicare or
– Well, this is a Social Security and Roth conversion question all in one.
Well, that's a little better.
It's a little better. It's covering both now. Okay.
Okay.
This is First Floridian.
Ah, when we get back next week, when we're in our studio, we can put
we're
a star,
put a star
on,
on Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But this is our first Floridian who contact us.
As many people, and especially as many retirees in Florida, I'm surprised this is the first one we've gotten from Florida. Hopefully this is the first of many.
First of many.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, at First Floridian, my mom just bought a new house in Florida, by the way.
I know, and she doesn't even call us from there.
No, she doesn't call us anymore.
Do you take that personally?
Well, she's my mom. She's
well, I think she felt bad for us before because we weren't getting any questions, but now we usually do. Even if they come in via email, that's just as good.
True. Okay, okay, so we had a Floridian.
Mm-hmm. Also named George. See, this is my problem.
Well, this would technically be a Georgette.
Right, another Georgette.
Well, you don't have to write this one down because she's not eligible for the pie drawing. She lives in Florida.
Oh, okay.
Look at me, ready to write her down. Well, you're going to mail a Fat Albert's pie to Florida?
We could.
It'll melt by the time it gets there. Okay, so she wrote a very long email, so I'm not going to read it quite that long. But she begins, "Hi, Jim. Love the podcasts. I've been listening to all of your past shows, and I think I remember hearing you explain that if you do a Roth conversion, you have 3 years, 3 months, and 15 days to report it to Social Security. I cannot find that episode, but I need to." And then she writes, "We did Roth conversions from my husband's IRA in 2012, 2013, and 2015. But it doesn't look like the converted amount was reported to the Social Security Administration. What they did is they got reports from Social Security of their earnings history.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not see the converted amounts from 2012, 2013, and 2015 being included on the earnings reports from the Social Security Administration. And they wrote to us saying, help us because we only have 3 years, 3 months, and 15 days to correct any error in our earnings history report." And I'll let you answer and address all that. I want to hit on one thing, and this is one of the first things we had to explain to this person, and I want our listeners to know. Not all your income is subject to Social Security taxes at all. Capital gains is not. Passive income is not. Any type of passive income. Distributions from IRAs, you pay income taxes on them. You do not pay Social Security taxes on them. So when you convert, even though that is taxable to you as income, you don't have to declare that income and pay Social Security taxes on it. So Social Security is not going to use that income in your calculation of your Social Security benefit.
That's exactly right. And if you think about it, in order to have put money into an IRA or a Roth, you had to earn it with wage. There had to be wages in the first place. These accounts essentially have income put into them. In the case of a traditional IRA where you've deducted it, it's pre-tax income. You're essentially deferring recognition of that income for tax purposes to some later date in retirement. But if you go back and check your payroll slip, you'll see that they withhold Social Security and Medicare taxes, FICA taxes, what we generally call payroll taxes, have been withheld and sent in. So you recognize that income when it's earned, not when it's taxed for income purposes. So in the case where she's looking at, as she's realizing, we didn't pay taxes on this when it went in, but it was income taxes that weren't paid. You paid all other taxes. The only that hasn't been paid is income taxes. So when you convert from a traditional deductible IRA to a Roth, that does create a taxable event, but only income taxes. As Jim mentioned, there's all kinds of things called income that are taxed as income but are not wages, which these are wage taxes, are payroll taxes that are Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid type taxes.
Right. And maybe I should have even explained that a couple of segments ago when I was talking about deductible, non-deductible IRAs. Even though you don't pay income taxes, you are still paying Social Security and Medicare taxes. That is never escaped. So in the case of her conversion, as Chris just said, in the case of her conversion, she put money into her IRA. That money was already subject to Social Security and Medicare. She already paid taxes on the money she put in. When she converts it, she doesn't pay taxes, Social Security taxes on it again, and the growth is considered passive income, and passive income is never subject to Social Security taxes. So that's why the entire conversion is never reported to the Social Security Administration. Right. She's still going to get her Social Security credits on the income going in because she paid Social Security taxes on it. But passive income never increases your Social Security. Only active physical labor you do goes into your Social Security calculation. If you have rental homes, if you have investment accounts, if you have leases, or if you have mineral rights, none of that. It's all taxed to you as income. Don't get me wrong. You're still going to pay full income taxes on it. But they are not going to give you any Social Security benefits on passive income. So they're not going to subject it to Social Security taxes. And that's why none of that converted amount was reported to the IRS as Social Security income.
And once again, people might in the back of their mind be thinking, well, wait a minute. I have heard that taking distributions from your IRA can somehow affect your Social Security. It is an indirect effect. It is possible that – and this happens to people generally when they reach required minimum distribution age, which is 70 and a half. They're receiving Social Security, which if that's their only source of income, they're not paying income tax. Due to the limits currently, this isn't always going to be the case. As Social Security benefits grow into the future, these limits are not growing. So people will slowly be captured, more and more will be captured in this taxation net. But right now, if you only have Social Security as your income source, you don't pay income taxes. But then when you start taking distributions from a traditional IRA or a 401k and recognizing that as income, you can be pushed into a situation where now your Social Security is subject to income taxes, thus effectively reducing the amount of Social Security that you're being able to pocket or put into your bank account. So there is that indirect connection between IRA, 401k distributions and Social Security as far as the tax treatment of Social Security benefits. So that if you're thinking in the back of your mind, wait a minute, you know, there is a connection there. That's the connection you're probably thinking of. There is not a direct Social Security tax in any way on distributions or conversions from IRAs and 401ks.
Excellent. Okay. How much time do we have?
In this segment, we have 5 or 6 minutes or have to
– And remember, folks, when we come back, we're going to have another email question that actually made it to our blog post, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So we will give that to you on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com next segment. And it is a email question that stumped us originally. So we reached out to the person who writes the software we use. It stumped him, and Chris and he did a little bit of research. We found the correct answer, but it made us go, wow, we never knew that. Yep. So it's interesting. We love it. And that's one of the reasons we encourage people to write to us, because even the gentleman who writes the software and has one of the best-selling Social Security books, by the way, out there, and his second edition is coming out soon. He didn't even know this.
He didn't
this.
Know off the top of his head. He had to research it.
He had to research it. And we love getting questions like that. So that's going to be in the next segment. That's called a teaser. You see, that's going to keep people listening.
You hope so?
Well, I would listen.
Oh, good. Well, we have to because we're here.
I have to. I'm here. But so, I mean, what's more exciting than what stumped?
But what would be perfect before we talk about more Social Security is a phone call with some other topic.
If anybody has anything else besides Social Security and Roth conversions.
970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310. Or you can email us. We'll get it right away at jim@jimhelps.com.
Let me check to see if we got
That's jim@jimhelps.com. And if you email or call in during the show, you get entered into our pie drawing, receive a pie if you are the lucky recipient or if you are the lucky randomly chosen caller at the end of the month, you'll get a coupon for a free Fat Albert's pie from Fat Albert's restaurant here in lovely Greeley, Colorado. And I was going to say one other quick thing. Oh, even if you have another 10th anniversary suggestion for me, I've kind of got quite a range. We go from tin on one hand, extreme of choices, diamonds or tin.
Well, you also got
I'd
a tractor
like to
and
find
a vacuum.
Something in between. Well,
those were given to you last, tractor and vacuum. Vacuum was from yours truly.
Yep. How about an attachment? You know what I did? I did find a deal and ordered a cart to pull behind my lawn tractor to haul dirt and stuff like that, but it hasn't arrived, and she doesn't know I ordered it. So I could wrap that up.
I just got a good deal for the office and bought as a cordless Dyson. So I'll let you take that and give that to her.
She's actually been wanting
a cordless Dyson.
Yeah. I want to try it at the office. If it's nice, maybe I'll get her that one. Well, is it coming soon?
Yeah, the cleaning woman's been not too happy with our vacuum choices.
Right.
And she likes Dyson.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who rents upstairs has a Dyson, so she takes his. Mm. Well, it's upsetting him that she's using his Dyson. It's just turning into a to-do.
A drama.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Unnecessary.
Yes.
So Amazon had a special on the cordless Dyson, so I bought it.
Oh.
Because she wanted it cordless.
Mm.
She wants to be able to move it around the office, she said, without a cord.
Okay.
So you can try it.
Yeah.
And if you like it, you can get her for her 11th anniversary.
Well, I still have some time. I have till the 20th.
Well, it'll be in on Monday.
Oh, perfect. So I can try it and then
– Well, you got to power it up first, charge it.
Okay. Then plug it in on Monday. I'll try it on Tuesday.
Okay.
You get a free vacuuming at the office. I'm not going to vacuum the whole office.
You're going to do the
– I'm going to try one little bit.
Okay.
Okay.
So, do
you want to just break?
Why
don't we go ahead and take our break now? It's what's called a soft break.
We're going to go the entire.
This is a short break, so if people want to call in during the break, 970.
If someone would please call in, because also we have a Roth conversion and Social Security emails.
Yeah, and this isn't the Social Security show.
You're really getting anti-Social Security. For someone who hosts helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, you're really starting to hate Social Security.
I don't hate it. I just would like a little. It's like lobster tail. I'm not going to eat that every meal.
Well, if somebody has a question about retirement, as long as it doesn't involve Social Security, because Chris isn't going to want to answer it, or Roth conversions, because we've gotten a lot of those. We beat that horse to death. If we could
Beat the dead horse.
Huh?
It's okay. Go ahead.
If we could get a question that has nothing to do with Social Security or Roth conversions, we would greatly appreciate it.
That'd be awesome.
Now that's pleading and begging.
It is. So when we come back from this short break, we are going to hear the number one song from 35 years ago this week. This artist in this week's song obtained a teaching degree from the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama.
Scottish? You have to say it with a Scottish accent?
Yes. In case her music career didn't take off.
It's a woman.
She had a backup plan. She could have been a teacher.
All right. And for those who want to call, Chris didn't give the number. It is 970-353-1310.
I've given it like 20 times.
I know, but no one's calling, so we're begging and pleading.
Okay. We'll be back right after this short break.
Mom, if you're listening, you can call.
Welcome back to this final segment of the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number one song from this week back in 1981, 35 years ago this week.
She's Scottish?
She is Scottish.
She doesn't have that Scottish accent.
Well, a lot of people, like Adele, doesn't sing with her tremendous...
True. It's kind of like the guy on The Walking Dead, the head guy. He's English. If you hear him talking regular, he's got this thick English accent, but he does the whole show
without it.
As an American from Georgia without an accent. It's really weird. I don't know how he can turn it on and off. The first time I saw him being interviewed, I was like, why is he pretending to be English? Well, he's not. He's English, and he's got this thick, heavy English accent.
Yeah, so that is Sheena Easton. Sang that song,
Morning
Train.
Scottish.
Used to be the original name of the song was 9 to 5, but of course she was competing with the, at that time, much more famous Dolly Parton in her song. So they changed the title of the song to Morning Train. Yeah.
Okay.
She did finish out the year with a Grammy for Best New Artist.
Good. She went far with that.
She did. So, why do we do this? I mean, this whole songs from the glorious past.
We lead into, because Chris just loves Social Security. You can ignore his complaints before.
Uh-oh. That garden cart I was telling you about showed up at the house. Now she knows.
She knows the garden cutters. It rules yeah. that out for her gift.
Yeah. Hopefully, I can get. Maybe they just dumped it off without ringing the bell, and I can hide it when I get home.
I don't know. I think the emailer who said six kids equals diamonds.
Okay, that's probably the good idea.
But anyways, what we do, mm-hmm. we host a blog post called HelpWithMySocialSecurity.com. So the first song that we play is a song from 1935 when Social Security was first founded. So that's why we look back to 1935. Then we go to the number one song in America 40 years ago. The reason we look at 40 is when Social Security first came out in 1935, they based the calculation on a very convoluted numbering system that they called 40 elapsed years. And then as Social Security evolved, and this was always written into the rule, they knew this was going to happen, they transitioned into what they now called 35 computation years. And that's why this last song that we did was the number one song in America 35 years ago. So 35, 40, and 1935 all tie into Social Security, and it is our lead-in to our blog post that we call Help with MySocialSecurity.com. And
what's new, Pussycat?
And now I was going to say, what's new and how about my Social Security? And then he was supposed to play the music. And he
you
wants
hesitated.
He wants to produce our video show.
You're very hard to follow sometimes, just so you know.
If he does produce the video show, he's got to get my good side.
Well, maybe if he wouldn't sit with your back to him all the time. So anyway, on HelpWithMySocialSecurity.com this week, when is a quarter not a quarter? And we're not talking about the change in your pocket.
No.
We're talking about quarters of coverage or credits. And for those of you familiar with Social Security, realize that you must earn 40 quarters of coverage or 40 credits in order to become eligible for retirement benefits. Also, to become your spouse to become eligible for spousal or survivor benefits on your record, it is important for you to hit those 40 quarters of coverage. And you can earn those quarters of coverage. You earn those via wages. And the number you earn every year, this year I think it's 1260. I should have remembered that off the top of my head. Every roughly $1,250, I think it is 1260. Every $1,260 you earn in a year earns you a quarter of coverage. And you can earn a maximum of 4 quarters of coverage in a year. So at minimum, it's going to take you 10 years of work in order to become eligible for retirement benefits.
And this we all knew.
And this is old news. We've talked about that on both the blog and on this radio show. But we had a reader or listener, I'm not sure which, I think it was a reader, that had emailed with a unique situation. And what we've talked about in the past is that $1,260, that can be earned any time during the year. If you earn that all on January 2nd, say 4 times that, so 48, about $5,000 roughly, a little over $5,000. If you were to earn that on the second day of January and then never earn another dollar, that year you would get 4 quarters of coverage.
Now,
you can earn them all 4 of them. Yeah.
Before you go on, let me just explain why that came about. When Social Security first came out, you had to earn 40 quarters. That was always in. And you had to earn at least $250. They've adjusted it for inflation now, and that's why it's up to $1,260. But you had to earn it every quarter, literally. So you had to work January, February, and March and earn at least $250. And then April, May, and June, $250. And then, of course, July, August, September, and then October, November, December. In 1978, it dawned on them, that's not really fair.
To seasonal workers.
To seasonal workers, exactly. There were some people who worked only half the year or three quarters of the year because they were seasonal workers. They could have been working up in ski country of Colorado. They could have been working farm fields. They could have been working as a landscaper, which I did years and years and years ago. And they had one or two quarters a year they weren't working. Yet during the year when they were working, they were earning quite a bit of money. But because they were laid off and didn't work maybe the last one or two quarters of the year, they were not getting credit for 4 quarters. And instead of taking 10 years, it was taking them 20 or more years to amass their 40 quarters. And they realized that's not fair. So they changed it from quarters to credits. They just changed the name. They began adjusting them for inflation, and they said you can earn them in any time. As long as you earn the money, we will pretend you worked all four quarters. So as Chris said, if you earned $5,000 on January 2nd, you would have earned all four quarters for that year in one day. That's the way they changed the rule. The one thing they didn't make very clear is you not only have to earn the money, you also have to live. And that's what Chris is going to get into.
Right. So in this blog post, we were contacted by a listener who was the survivor. They were the wife, and the husband had passed away last year. And prior to that year, prior to 2015, so by the end of 2014, he had earned 36 credits, or technically in the rules, they're still referred to as quarters of coverage, or QCs. Most of the time we call them credits now, just to get away from the word quarters. But he'd earned 36. And then he passed away in June of 2015. Wow. Of 2015 last year. But during the first half of the year, he earned well over what would be required.
He earned $15,000.
In excess of $15,000. So he easily would have met the $5,000 needed to earn four credits that year. Well, Social Security was denying her claim for survivor benefits.
Now, remember, before Chris goes in, remember, folks, he worked, earned $15,000. So she had listened to our blog post and thought, okay, he earned $15,000. It was $1,250 for each credit. He only needed four more credits. He got all of that very easy. So even though he had 36 credits in 2014, when he died in 2015, he had earned enough to make four more credits. 36 plus 4 is 40. She needed 40. She thought she could claim, yet she was denied.
She was denied and appealed and still was denied. Essentially, in the way they apply this, they still use the old rule of when to apply the credit. They give you the credit or award you the credit each quarter, even if all the earnings happened in the first quarter or the first couple of quarters. But the rules expressly describe that they cannot award a credit after the date of death. So he had passed away in June at the end, still within the second quarter. He doesn't get the third and fourth quarter credits. Even though he earned enough, he wasn't alive for those, and they didn't award him. So instead of going from 36 to 40 and unlocking the door for her survivor benefit, they only awarded him two credits, getting him up to 38, which left him two credits short of earning a retirement benefit and also generating a survivor benefit for his widow.
And if he would have died 3 months later, just maybe 3.5 months mm-hmm. later, just on October 1st, he would have made it to the fourth quarter,
yeah.
and they would have awarded him for the third and
credits.
Fourth quarter, and he would have made it. We had never seen this. I don't think we'll ever see a situation like this again.
Probably not.
We couldn't figure it out at first. We then reached out again to the gentleman who writes mm-hmm. our software and has the best-selling Social Security book. He had never heard of it. He researched it. Researched it, and they both came to the same conclusion and found it. And that's why his exact quote to Chris in the email back to him was, nasty, nasty, nasty.
Right. The situation is just ugly. I call it a tragic situation. Because
it is.
It literally, everything happened. The earnings were there. He just, timing-wise, missed it by 3.5 months. And it wasn't a matter of a reduced benefit.
It was no benefit.
All or nothing. And she's at nothing. She gets no survivor benefit whatsoever. Luckily, in her case, she does have a small benefit of her own. But she doesn't have any ability to claim a survivor benefit because of this.
And they want to appeal it. And they're trying to get the verbiage of the law that created this. And they're hoping there's some verbiage in there. That's going to be an awful lot of research they're going to have to do.
And
I don't think it's going to matter because the POMS, which is the like Bible of Social Security, mm-hmm. it specifically says what you said.
Right.
Now, the POMS, you might think, well, why couldn't we find it in the POMS? The POMS is bigger than the King James Bible. and it's hard to find it, and it's hard to find things. But that's where Chris and this gentleman did end up finding it, and we got the actual regulation. But we had never known that. So that was technically they stumped the can't say experts, but they stumped us. Stumped the chumps.
So that's what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com this week.
What's new? What you can't?
Okay, I'm still interested by that. That's what I like. And that's why I encourage our iTunians to reach out to us. We will make every effort to answer questions. We do have to say we can't answer them sometimes as quick as what people would want. And we do ask them to understand that. But we like it because this has now become fodder for our radio show. It has become a blog post for us. But more importantly, we learn something from it.
That's educational for all of us. Right, every one of these, it would be hard to memorize, although some people I think have done it, memorize the Bible, right? You kind of learn it a little piece at a time, a little bit here, a little bit here, there. You research this, you look at this story, you look at that. Same kind of thing. I'm learning more and more about this as much as I've absorbed over time. I certainly don't claim to know all of the rules down to their finest detail, but it's cases like this is one I'll never forget. This is one because
remember this.
Because of the circumstances, this is one of those where this rule will be with me forever, and it's, you know, a sad situation.
Someday we're going to be on like a game show, and this is going to be the $1 million question, and they're going to think they have us nailed, that we're not going to get the $1 million, and they're going to ask this question, and you're going to nail it.
I can hope so. So do we have well, again, we still have time for a call, 970-353-1310, or an email at jim@jimhelps.com.
I can't say it's the weather today because it's not a very nice day out there. So there's got to be people in the house listening. I don't think people like us anymore.
Yeah, could be one or the two of us. So even a call saying, yeah, if you got rid of Chris or you got rid of Jim, we'd listen a lot more. That'd be helpful information to know. Please make it me.
I wouldn't want to know the answer.
Please.
It's my show. I'm not leaving. Okay. Well, what I'm going to talk about then is something that was recently posted on the financial planning blog that I follow.
We have plenty of topics, by the way. So if you're not going to call, we're just going to
use nobody's going to call. I'm going to keep talking.
Right.
And no one's calling.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Not even the pie. The chance to win a Fat Albert's pie is not working, which amazes me.
Yeah. It's okay.
If I could call, disguise my voice, and win a pie, I would. Because summer is the key lime. They have an awesome key lime
pie.
It's
not summer. It's May.
It's almost summer.
We're more than a month away. We're 6 weeks from summer.
Well, the weather's warmer. Not today, but it's definitely warmer.
Okay.
I'm going to Georgia. It's 88 when I go there, according to the weather forecast. You're not telling me they're not already eating key lime pies in Georgia because it's not
– peach pie down there.
Yeah, peach. True. It is peach. Okay. So anyways, excuse me. This gentleman wrote on the forum, he wanted to know when when somebody does a 60-day rollover from an IRA – and I don't want to get too much into all the nuances of 60-day rollovers, but that is when you take money from an IRA, you take it as cash, the IRA sends you the cash, no taxes withheld, no penalties, you get the cash for 60 days. You can do what you want with it. Now, theoretically, the Congress wrote this for you to take it and move it directly into another IRA, but because they gave you 60 days, very creative people ended up using the money for other things, and then they tried to get that money back into an IRA within 60 days. So they were using it as a lot of short-term loans, Chris. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about that before.
And the dangers of doing that.
And the dangers. So anyways, this gentleman wrote and said, when does the 60-day period begin? When does the measuring period begin? Because you can also only do one per year as well. Used to be one per IRA account. They changed that because of a tax court ruling called the Barbro case. And beginning in 2015, it's one per person per year. So he wrote and he asked, when does that measuring period begin? When did they begin the measuring period for the 60 days? And is that the same measuring period for the 1 year? And there were all sorts of people writing answers.
Which is fascinating because these are all supposed to be financial advisor professionals.
Yes. And the one thing is, the person who wrote the answer, I respect immensely. This is like questioning God. I mean, he is so revered in our industry. I subscribe to his services. I follow him whenever I can. I read everything he writes. I like the guy. I actually got into an argument with him at the FPA meeting. Not an argument, a very heated discussion of where I saw the financial planning industry going and where he saw it going. But he's a nice guy, very, very smart. And he wrote, the measuring period begins from date of distribution. And you said right away,
not quite right.
Not quite right. And I haven't corrected him. I'm not going to. It's like,
Jim, stand up for yourself.
I know. So if he's listening, and I highly doubt he is,
yeah, right.
You know who you are. And it's not the day. Technically, he could be right. So let's explain.
Actually, no, he's not right. I'll go on record of saying he's just absolutely wrong.
Well, technically, he could be right.
No, because it's really the date you receive it. Now, the date you receive it might happen to be the date of distribution.
Correct.
But
that's what I mean.
That's a coincidence. That doesn't mean he's right.
That's not a technicality. That's a coincidence.
That's a coincidence.
Let me explain what Chris is opining on, because Chris picked up on it right away and said he's wrong. And I was like, you tell him. I'm not telling him.
I will. I'll log in as you and I'll tell him.
Oh, yeah. Log in as me and post under me. Yeah. You're wrong.
And here's my address if you want to talk about it.
It is not the date of distribution. It's the date you receive the money. We have talked about this. And I began doubting myself again. So I reached out to the other big kahuna, Ed himself, and Ed's group. Bev got back to me. And she said, it's the date you receive the money, Jim. Mm-hmm.
Which is what we know it to be.
Correct. But she confirmed what we thought. Now, it could technically be as Chris – well, coincidence. If the request for the money from the IRA was made and sent electronically, so the money is distributed from the IRA, say, on Monday and is deposited into your bank account on Monday, because electronic now is very fast, then yes, the date of distribution is also the date that you received the money.
Mm-hmm.
But we have talked many times. We've talked about private letter rulings. We have talked about this whole incident or this whole situation. If it's a paper check, when the paper check is written and dated, if you look at your IRA, it's already distributed on the date that the IRA writes the check. They reduce the value of your IRA by that much. Mm-hmm. They don't wait for you to cash the check. So it's technically distributed on the date of the check, but the time period does not begin until you receive the check. We've written about people whose mail was late. We used to talk when we talked about this on previous shows. This is going back several years now. We talked about the Christmas gift my father got in April, but that I promptly mailed from the birth and post office. They're not getting out of this. I'm hauling them out again on December 6th. 2012, I mailed my father a gift. He got it in April of 2013. Now, in that case, that's well past 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
If that was a rollover check from your IRA, you would not have been nailed at all because you got the money, goodness, 6 months later. It's when you receive, not when it's distributed. But he wrote, it's measured from date of distribution. I'm not going to correct him. You can if you want, and you're not logging in under me. You got your own login.
Okay, I'll
log
in as me, and I'll say, I talked to Jim Salinger, and he said you're wrong. So anyway, we are coming to the end of another show here. We're down to the last couple of minutes. So don't call in now. It's too late. You've missed
yes.
it. But 2 weeks from now, we're going to have Peter Scott in the studio. So we're going to open the door to estate planning questions, which would be, you know, property transfers, what you'd like to how you want to treat your children once you pass away, how you want your assets to be distributed, protecting yourself. You know, estate planning isn't really much anymore about taxes for most people. Very, very few people are affected by estate taxes. Everyone is affected by estate planning issues. And Prince recently died without a will, there's a big estate planning nightmare.
They're still unsure of that.
They're still looking at that,
they're
but it
still
appears
trying to
right
find
now
one.
Yeah, that there's no will. So estate planning issues in 2 weeks would be perfect to call in, talk to Peter Scott. He's in about once a month, so there'll be your chance in May. I may or may not be there. It probably
it
depends
is his
on
anniversary.
If I provide diamonds to my wife the night before, I might be exhausted and won't be able to make it the next day.
But if it was 10.
If it's 10, I'll probably be here.
with a black eye.
Yeah. So we want to thank everybody for joining us here on the Retirement and IRA Show. Even between shows during the week, we'd love to hear from you. Jim@jimhelps.com or just go to our website at theretirementandiraShow.com. That's just like it sounds. It's really long. TheretirementandiraShow.com. You can find that both on iTunes, a lot of other podcast software, as well as our website itself. You've got links to all of us, see what we're doing, ask us questions, etc. So, Jim, do you have anything to say in the last 30 seconds?
Happy Mother's Day to all mothers out there, including my own, who I love very much.
Yes, happy birthday.
No, Mother's Day.
No, happy birthday to my wife this past week.
Oh.
And happy Mother's Day to my wife tomorrow. May is really stressful
That's
for me.
That's tough. You got a birthday, an anniversary, and Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Woo, doggy.
June 1st, I can't wait for you to get here. So thanks for joining us here on the Retirement and IRA Show. Have a great week. We'll be back with you next week with another show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Missed any of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the Retirement and IRA Show.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.